It's 5:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Women have made progress in the workplace. We have more female leaders in the business world than ever before.
But surveys of women in the workplace show the majority feel gender discrimination exists, and almost three-quarters of female professionals in Washington, D.C. say men have more opportunities than women do.
How can women deal with this gender bias? What should they do to fight assumptions about gender roles at work? Our next guest wrote a how-to book that offers advice for women in the workplace.
We're joined by Joan C. Williams and Rachel Dempsey, mother and daughter, also the authors of What Works for Women at Work, Four Patterns Working Women Need to Know. Joan is an expert on work and family issues who's written extensively on gender bias. Rachel is a writer and a student at Yale University School of Law. Joan, thanks for being here.
Delighted to be here.
And Rachel, good to have you along, too.
It's great to be here.
Well, we're a long way out from the days when women were limited to a couple of so-called female professions. We've now got women surgeons, soldiers, pilots, just about anything you can think of. But the numbers of women who report gender bias at work is still pretty significant. Why are so many women still experiencing gender bias on the job, Joan?
There are a lot of studies that show that although explicit bias has really, really fallen, subtle or implicit bias really hasn't changed much at all. And so not all, but a lot of what we talk about is the kind of subtle biases that come out in everyday workplace interactions.
Now, Joan, you developed a speech, a sort of presentation about this as you identified four categories of gender bias on the job. Can you tell us about the response that women gave you?
Well, I developed a talk called The Four Patterns of Gender Bias. That was the first step, really, in my evolution on this. And I would describe them, and women immediately recognize them when you name these four patterns. But I realized that I had to stop giving that talk because I was just depressing them. And so what I did is went and every time I met a savvy woman, I said, can I interview you? And what the book, What Works for Women at Work, shows is the strategies that women have used in order to successfully navigate through these patterns of bias.
And Rachel, you represent the next generation of women on the job. What do you think changed between your mother's generation and your own?
One of the women that we interviewed, I think, characterized this very well. She said, what happened is the low-hanging fruit of gender bias has all been picked. So the explicit discrimination, the out loud comments about how men are better employees than women, are largely eliminated. And what remains is these biases that the research that Joan studied identified.
Now, you talk about the four areas that you've identified and that these are the areas that women need to be aware of, and you provide tools for working within them. But let's start by talking about them first. Can you run us through them quickly, Rachel?
Yes. So the first pattern of bias is called prove it again. And it is that women have to show more evidence of competence to be seen as competent as men. The second pattern is the tightrope, and it's that women have to walk a very fine line between being liked and being respected. And there's backlash if you veer too much towards either one of those characteristics. The third is maternal wall, and it's the bias that women experience when they become mothers, and it's actually documented bias that mothers are seen as less competent and committed even when their work performance is the same. And the fourth pattern is gender wars, and that's what happens when bias against women turns into conflict between women.
And Joan, of those four, which do you think is the most prevalent in the workplace?
Well, based on my interviews with the women I spoke to, the tightrope bias was the most prevalent. Three-quarters of the women I spoke to had encountered that kind of bias. So they felt they often had to choose between being liked but not respected or respected but not liked. So here's an example of the kind of liked but not respected sort of problem. Often women are expected to do a large load of what we call office housework. So that could be taking notes, answering the phone, planning parties, actually, is something that women are very often expected to do. And then there's substantive work that is important but very devalued. Committee work is a good example. And women are often expected to do far more of that. And so we provide strategies for women who find themselves with very heavy loads of office housework.
So we're not just talking about, you know, the 9-to-5 thing, Dabney Coleman saying go make a pot of coffee or something like that. We're talking about things that are more subtle.
You know, so actually, sometimes it's amazing. I interviewed one woman at a very, very large company whose name you would recognize, and she was just two levels down from the CEO. And just as a result of the interview, she decided to stop making cupcakes for everybody's birthday. So some of it's subtle, some of it's not very subtle, but obviously, in that kind of situation, what you say is, if it's your birthday, tell your supervisor your birthday, and then the supervisor's assistant will make sure there's a party for everybody. It's just a very concrete strategy that would help people. Or if you're constantly being asked to take notes, then take notes once, and then just say perkily, you know, I think we should set up a rotation, and we'll take turns taking notes.
How do you feel, before we get into more of the practicalities of your advice, both of you I'd like to hear from, but we'll start with Rachel, but how do you feel about having to set up sort of this labyrinth course for women to cope with these things? Your advice ranges from, you know, little strategies from comebacks that you can use to have at your ready, to tone of voice, to body posture. Why does women still have to worry about this? Why can't they just show up at work and be themselves, Rachel?
Well, there's a very well-known and a great book on these issues called Through the Labyrinth. So you're not the first person who has noted that it's sort of a labyrinth that women have to go through in order to dodge a lot of the biases and the obstacles that are in their way. That said, I don't think that the book should be read as a labyrinth. It's more of a toolkit. So if you, in your experience, run into these problems, then there are solutions that are concrete and that you can find in the book. You don't need to follow. There's absolutely no way to follow all of the advice in the book. We don't recommend it. I would not do that. And the fact is that women have very, very different problems. And one good example of that is the tightrope. We divided problems in the tightrope into two masculine problems and two feminine problems. And obviously, those are very sort of imprecise words for what's happening. But women who face backlash for being too aggressive and women who aren't taken seriously for not being aggressive enough. And we really tried to come up with patterns with solutions for both of those problems. And often women will have one problem or the other problem, but obviously you don't need to do both sets of solutions.
Right, so it's a toolkit, but what about the standing question, Joan, that in this day and age, women need to have such an extensive toolkit?
You know, I have worked for 20 years on changing organizations to make a level playing field for women, and organizations are changing, but they're not changing fast enough. There are still very few women CEOs, and there's still very few women on the top jobs. And sad to say, at a certain point, I just said, you know, instead of working only on organizational change, I'm going to give women a guidebook to help them navigate what's there now. Do I wish they needed it? No. But do they need it? Yes, they do. And since they do, I'm going to provide it for them.
Well, before we go to the news, let's talk a little bit about the first category, the prove it again gender bias that exists in workplace. And this essentially is saying that, you know, men can prove themselves once or, you know, whatever it takes, and then they're good. They've got the stamp of approval and they can go forward. Women find they have to keep proving themselves over and over again. Joan, what can they do when that happens?
Well, one thing they can do, if you think about it, women's mistakes tend to be noticed more and remembered longer, and their successes tend to be attributed to luck rather than skill. So if people are going to tend to remember your mistakes, you're going to have the objective facts to show them what your accomplishments are. So it's very important for everybody, but especially for women, to take careful real-time records and document all objective metrics that you've met. If you get a compliment, if it's by email, make sure you keep it. If it's not, say, I'm so delighted. Can you drop that in an email? I'm really going to treasure it. Because then when you're in a context where you're being evaluated, you have objective things to show people. Another important strategy we call the posse, which is that to have a group of people, actually we recommend men as well as women, and you celebrate each other's successes. So again, you're keeping your successes at the top of people's mind. The posse also is what I call gender judo. You're doing something very masculine, which is self-promoting, but you're doing it in a way that's expected of women, a feminine way. Because women, of course, are supposed to be modest and attuned to others. So the posse allows you to celebrate someone else's successes. What a selfless, good woman. Meanwhile, though, someone's celebrating yours.
So you're not just talking about going out for a drink to celebrate a good deal done after work. You're talking about actively talking each other up.
Absolutely. I was in my office one time and I received an email and it said, it was from Peter and it said, Letty did a good thing. And then several months later, I received another email and it was from Letty and it was talking about the great thing that Peter did. That's the posse.
Well, we're talking to Joan Williams and Rachel Dempsey about their new book called What Works for Women at Work, Four Patterns Working Women Need to Know.
And we want to hear from you. Is this ringing a bell for you? Are you nodding along saying, yeah, that's what it's like where I work or where I used to work? Call in at 800-642-1234. Do you think gender discrimination, subtle or overt, is still a big problem in our workplaces? Why or why not? 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or send an email, talk@WPR.org.
We'll continue our conversation in a minute, and now a look at some of the latest news with Kristen Durst.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're talking with Joan Williams and Rachel Dempsey right now. They're the authors of What Works for Women at Work. Their new book is about ways for women to combat gender bias on the job.
And do you have a question maybe about where you work now? Are you experiencing this kind of bias or do you see it among other people at your workplace? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can share your questions, your experiences, maybe your own advice at 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
Let's go to the calls right now, and we've got Vaishali joining us in Madison. Hi, Vaishali.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure. What do you think?
Well, I'm thrilled that, first of all, you're doing this piece. I think it is timely and important because I agree with the earlier comment that the low-hanging fruit has already been picked, so I think that gives people the misinterpretation that perhaps this is not such a big issue anymore. I think it's huge, and it's just happening in more subtle ways. And I like the discussion about factors numbers 1 and 2, but I actually feel, from my perspective, and this has happened to me personally, I'm a professor at a major medical school, a highly ranked medical school in the country. And I can tell you that in my department, the problem is actually woman on woman. And it's not the men that are holding these biases. It's women who have chosen very different life paths for themselves versus those of us who have tried to balance having family with our careers. And that's been at the core, I think, of, you know, because you're a woman who's made this choice, then you have to prove it again that you're still committed even after having kids.
So you're talking about, Vaishali, you're talking about tug-of-wars that happen in the office between women, or are you talking about stuff that takes place outside of the workplace?
I'm talking about within the workplace, not so much on a day-to-day interaction level, but when it comes to decisions about promotion and career advancement.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you for that. And Rachel, let's talk about that a bit, because that is something that comes up in your book as something that is very important. And it seems as though, I guess, you know, as a woman, we think it should be natural to support and help and defend other women, but it doesn't always play out that way. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so this is Vaishali, what you described is a typical example of the tug of war, and specifically of mommy wars. And I think that the decisions that you were talking about, and you characterized it well, it's choices about how you live your life. It's choices about whether or not you have kids. It's choices often tug of war will emerge around between women who have sort of two masculine problems and women who have two feminine problems. And these choices are all very, very personal choices, and they're all very, very sensitive choices. And these conflicts arise when people make different choices and end up getting judged for being the wrong kind of woman.
And if I can add one thing, I mean, the reason that the tug of war arises and it's so vivid in this arena is you think about it, almost every woman is trying to prove that she's a good worker and a good mom if she's a mother. And so that every woman feels, oh my gosh, maybe I'm not such a good mom. Maybe I'm not such a good worker. Or if you don't have kids, you're trying to prove that you actually are a full-grown woman with a full life without children. All of these women feel embattled. And they all feel embattled because they're all being judged because of these various gender assumptions. And that's what sets them and creates the conflict among them.
Well, what is some advice that you can give us, Joan, about how to deal with some of these things when they come up as mothers, maybe when a working mother feels that she is, her commitment is seen as lacking or something else that typically comes up? What can a woman do?
I think the most important advice in tug of war is it's one of the patterns that is really important to recognize that it is the result of gender bias in the environment. It's not the result of an individual woman with a personality problem. And you really have to recognize the limits of sisterhood. After all, do men always support other men? They don't. But if you are having mommy wars problems in a workplace environment, it probably means that the mothers are really embattled. And it may mean that the women without children feel like they're getting huge loads of work dumped on them. The one study shows that women without children actually work the longest hours of unpaid overtime. And so I think it's really important for the women to realize that they're all struggling and that if they somehow can work together if they can work together, that they can maybe change the workplace.
We have an email here from Janet who says, I just started a new job and my coworkers and myself have been referred to as girls each of the 4 days I've been there. This happened both at the work site and during orientation. I'm a 50-something-year-old professional. Why does this persist? Why do I have to address this at every workplace? Rachel, what would you say to Janet?
I would say to Janet, unfortunately, the patterns of gender bias that we've identified are very strong, and people have a hard time associating women with professional success, and that will lead to things like an infantilizing girls. As far as advice for her, I would recommend, one, the women can talk to each other and start referring to themselves pointedly as women or as whatever they want to be referred to. You can also, in that situation, find an ally if there's someone that at the workplace that you think might be sympathetic to your argument. Talk to him and see if he can try to change the language.
And in our last couple of minutes here, I wonder if, Joan and Rachel, you could both take a turn giving a couple ideas for women to sort of own their power and to perform like powerful women who deserve respect and are ready to move up in the workplace. Joan, what would you tell someone?
Well, one thing that happens to women all the time is what we call the stolen idea, where a woman says something and it's overlooked, and a man says something and all of a sudden it's heard and it's really brilliant. So we represent a lot of, we provide a range of comebacks. You can have a sort of what we call a true moxie comeback. When it happens, you just say, is there an echo in here? Or when it happens to another woman, you can say, well, you know, as I heard Rachel say that, this was my take on it. Or when it happens to you, you can say, you know, you've heard exactly what I was thinking, and then add a point to it so it's not so confrontative.
Okay, so those are some good ideas, and that's one that I think happens to a lot of people. It could be useful in a number of scenarios. Rachel, what do you suggest?
So I have two pieces of advice, and they're not entirely consistent. The first is this is sort of a concrete situation where often when there's a job opening or an opportunity for promotion, say there's 9 criteria that are required in the job posting, women will often wait until they have 10 of those things before they apply to a job. Men will do it with 6. So being conscious and putting yourself forward, even when you don't necessarily perfectly fit the job description, is a very important. And then on the second piece of advice I have is to be gentle with yourself and know that it's not always your fault. These biases are real. They have documented effects. And often you can be doing everything basically right and still run into problems.
And we have to leave it there. Sorry, but thank you so much. We appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We've been speaking to Joan Williams and Rachel Dempsey. They're the authors of What Works for Women at Work, 4 Patterns Working Women Need to Know.